ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजम् उरुकुरीं माधुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्दे हं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतःपरकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। There is a narration in Shastra concerning herons and swans. A heron is a kind of bird that stands on the bank of a lake and eats fish and snails. The Sanskrit word is bakka. As Krishna killed one asura called bakka, so Krishna is called bakari. Buck of it. So the herons, they stand on the edge of the lake and they look for some nasty things to eat. One time a group of herons, this is the narration from Shastra, one time a group of herons were thus engaged when they saw a group of swans flying by, and the swans came down and rested a little in their lake or their small pond. So the herons, they asked the swans, "Where are you coming from?" They said, "We're coming from the Manasarovar lake." Manasarovar. And the swans described this very beautiful place with golden lotuses. The swans are famous, they're described in Shastra, that the swan sportingly will wrap his long neck around the lotus stem. What's going on here? This. So they describe the water is crystal clear and pure, quite unlike the muddy pond that the herons were used to. So they described it such a beautiful, calm, peaceful place, very nice for swans. And the herons, seeing their little muddy pond, understood that the Manasarovar sounds like a much better place. Then the herons asked the swans, "Well, okay, it sounds very good, but what kind of snails do they have there? Are they big and fat and juicy like the nice snails we eat here. And the swans replied, no, no, they're no snails. We don't eat things like that. And the herons immediately responded, well, we don't want to go to such a place if there are no nice juicy snails to eat. And that's the story. It's a short anecdote. But the import is that different kinds of people have different kinds of taste, and swan-like persons, who are called hamsas or paramahamsas, they like that which is pure, but that which is pure is not attractive to people who are attracted to that which is impure. That is suggested by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Yanisha Sarva Bhutani Tasyang Jagati Yanisha Sarva Bhutani Tasyang Jagati Sangyami Sanisha Pashto Munehe. That what is night, what is considered night for all living beings, that is daytime for the muni, the thoughtful person. And that which, and just the opposite, it's a night and day difference. Their outlook is completely different. People who are interested in Krishna, in spiritual advancement, they are attracted to Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. And persons who are not interested in Krishna, their interest is completely different. They're interested in nasty things like eating meat and taking intoxication, and they think that to drive a car or a motorcycle very fast, this is the highest pleasure in life. They're attracted to very base things, whereas swan-like personalities, they're attracted to that which is pure and clean and beautiful. And the topmost swan-like people, they are attracted to Krishna, who is the supreme pure and the supreme beautiful. This story of the anecdote of the herons and the swans was also explained by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He described the snail-eating activities. He compared that to persons who promote social welfare activities such as opening hospitals and schools so that people can so-called progress in material life. He compared such people to herons who think that something which is actually very low, they consider it to be the best thing, and they cannot appreciate what is really the highest thing, which is that which is beyond all the activities of this material world, which simply bind us in suffering. They do not appreciate Krishna consciousness. There's also an anecdote with a similar meaning that appeared in one of the early editions of the Back to Godhead magazine, and which used to be in our ISKCON a common subject of dramas. The theme is very simple, that on, and I'll just add a little interpretation also, that there was a river on one side of which were people who were very miserable in their outlook, And whatever they did, wherever they went, they walked around carrying on their back a big bag, heavy bag full of stones. And the persons who carried more stones, they were considered superior. They were considered more prestigious. And on the other side of the river, it was a completely different scene. The people living there were very, they didn't carry bags of stones. They were very peaceful and very happy. They were very cultured people. And sometimes from one side of the river, from the happy side of the river, the people would call to the bag carriers on the other side and say, "Why don't you come and join us? Why are you staying over there?" But among the bag carriers, the stone carriers, they would warn their children and everyone else, "Don't listen to those people over there. See what fools they are. They don't carry any stones on their back." But sometimes someone would come close to the river and they would hear the people calling from the other side, "Come and join us, be happy with us. Why are you miserable?" The stone-carrying people, they're always miserable, carrying their heavy weights, and they were not very pleasant people. They would always insult each other and curse each other. And if someone in his bag had 1 kilo more weights, then he would look down on others who would, "Oh, I'm carrying 54 kilos and he's only carrying 53 kilos. Ah, what a minor person. I'm much greater than him." But if there was anyone carrying 55 kilos or more, he would be extremely envious of him and say, "Ah, I don't believe it's 55 kilos. He's cheating. He's adjusting the scale." So in this way, these people were living a very miserable life, but sometimes someone would come close to the shore of the river and they would hear, "Oh, come and join us, it's very nice here." And they say, "Well, how can I join you? If I try to swim across the river, then the bag of stones will carry me down and drown me." And the people on the happy side of the river say, "Well, just leave your stones behind and then you can easily cross." "Leave my stones? Oh, what are you? You're telling me to leave my stones? I mean, this is our culture. This is our life. This is all we live for, is carrying our stones." And then they would go back and report actually to the other people, "Actually, it's right. Those people on the other side, they say they're happy, but they don't carry any stones. And they tried to make me come and join them by leaving behind my stones. What a bunch of crazy people." So the moral of this story is that, what is the moral? That we should carry stones? No. The moral is that we should join the happy people, who don't live with unnecessary encumbrances. In this material world, we accept as necessities so many things which are not at all necessary. We think that I have to work hard, make money, get more money. And if someone has more money than we become envious. If someone has less money than us, we become insolent. But really, we don't need to live in this material world at all. We're meant to live happily with Krishna in the spiritual world. And it's not very difficult. We have to cross over. Undoubtedly, we have to make a very big change in our lives if we're going to live happily with Krishna. But we've got nothing to lose except our material attachments, which keep us bound in this world and which make us miserable. But because we're attached, just like the people are attached to carrying their stones and they can't imagine living without their stones, so we're attached and we can't imagine living without what we consider to be valuable in this material world. Different people put value on different things. In the modern society, we think that if we have a big car, so a very fancy, fashionable car, we think that's very prestigious. All these things are called anarthas. That's the technical term, anartha. Or that which is has no real meaning. So we should go to Krishna. That is the sensible thing to do. But because we're influenced by everyone else around us, we think that to live in the same way that everyone else lives, that is the proper thing to do, even though no one is happy in this world. We think, well, what will everyone think of me if I give up my material attachments and become Krishna conscious? Well, the answer is, it doesn't really matter what they think of you. Another example we can give, it's like being in the madhouse, where everyone is crazy. They probably have a different term for madhouse nowadays. I guess it's just called the normal world. The whole world has become so crazy. But in the madhouse, if someone behaves in a normal way, in a way that outside the madhouse would be considered normal, inside the madhouse it's considered abnormal. So inside the madhouse, you have to act all crazy. And then everyone says, he's a good guy. But if you just act calmly and soberly, people say, what's wrong with you? So we don't have to remain forever in this madhouse, which is called the material world. In this material world, everyone is insane. That is stated by Rishabhdev Bhagavan. Nunang pramatah kurute vikarma yad indriya pritya aprinoti. Nasadhumanye yata atmanoyam asanapi kleshada asadeha. Rishabhdev says that definitely everyone in this world is mad. And the evidence for that is that people perform activities which cause them to get another material body, which means another round of suffering. If we tell people that this world is full of suffering, but you don't have to suffer, you can live very happily with Krishna eternally, you don't have to live here. And people in general are not very interested. They think, well, what do I want to live with Krishna for? I want to stay here, it's nice. I've got all these stones to carry on my back. How can I live without the stones on my back? So the basic principle of human life should be this. Labdva sudurlabhamidam bahu sambhavante manusham artadam anityam apihadhira turnam yatetanapatedanumritya yava nishrayasaya Vishaya Kalu Sarvatasyat. This human form of life is very valuable. We attain this human form of life after many, many, many births. Every birth means suffering. But in this human life, which is very rare to attain, but now we have it, in this human life, we can understand that this material existence is miserable and do whatever is required so that we don't get born again. So that's what we should do. we all have the opportunity to act in a way so that we will get born again, which most people do. Or we also have the opportunity to act in such a way that we don't get born again. We don't have much time to think about it because human life is very short. But it is very valuable, because if we act in a way that we won't get born again, then by Krishna's grace we won't get born again. And if we think, well, there are so many, I have so many stones to carry, then we'll go on carrying stones. What are those stones? Those stones is attachment to sense gratification. We think we'll be happy by eating all kinds of horrible things, and by developing our career and our material situation. But this kind of material so-called enjoyment that is present in every species of life, but only in the human form of life can we endeavor for self-realization. So this is the basis of spiritual life, is to understand that this material world is full of suffering, and the more developed stage of spiritual understanding is this Krishna consciousness, bhakti, full devotion to Krishna. So we simply ask people to be cognizant of these facts. It is a fact that life in this material world is not only unpleasant, but it's actually quite disgusting. Just like the herons eating slugs and snails. It's disgusting to eat flesh food. But people think it's very nice. As a result of that, they have to get born again. So we should be cognizant of this. We're in a very, very dangerous position. Another example is given that we can imagine someone is being chased by a mad elephant, and they're running and running, and then they fall off, and then they see that they're at the edge of a precipice, and there's a long drop. But just as they fall off the precipice, they catch. There's one tree which is just at the edge of the cliff, and they catch a root, the root of that tree, which is hanging. So they're stuck. If they climb up, they're holding onto the root of the tree. If they climb up, the elephant is waiting there to kill them. If they let go, then they'll fall down, and it's a long way to go, and they'll probably die from smashing their body. But even if they don't smash their body, they look down and see that there's a poisonous snake waiting for them at the bottom. So if they go up, they're in trouble. If they fall down, they're in trouble. And then they notice that the root that they're holding onto, there's a rat which is chewing on it. So now they're really in trouble. But just they can see above them, in the tree is a bee's nest, and some honey is dripping. And they put out their tongue, and the drops of honey are falling on their tongue. And they're thinking, oh, this is wonderful. It tastes so nice. Oh, so nice. So this is our condition in the material world. We're beset by danger on every side, and we can't avoid it. We can't avoid painful death. If we go up, the elephant will kill us. If we fall down, we'll either get smashed or bitten to death by the snake. And definitely we can't just hold on and hope that the fire brigade and the police will come and deliver us, because the rat is chewing. In other words, death is inevitable. But there are little drops of honey, little drops of sweetness, and forgetting all the pain and suffering and certain death that we must be subjected to, we cannot avoid, we think, oh, life is so nice. This example is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is our position in the material world. We like to forget all the danger and misery that we must be subject to. We are distracted by a little insignificant sense gratification. So therefore, Krishna reminds us, Vishaya kalu sarvatasyat. In every situation, some kind of sense enjoyment is available, but we should utilize this human form of life not for in trying to enjoy the senses, but for pursuing Krishna consciousness. So there are a few little anecdotes that we can think about. They're not the usual kind of story that you hear, but we should think very seriously. Who am I? Where am I going? What is the purpose of life? Who am I? The answer is, I am an eternal spirit. I am an eternal servant of Krishna. Where am I going? Well, that depends on all of us, how we act. We should fix our focus on going to the spiritual world, to Krishna. What is the purpose of life? Yes, to act in such a manner that we can go to Krishna. Hare Krishna.